Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Clempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man. It's great to be back here where things make sense.
Yes.
You know, where are we at? Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, where Christmas, it smells like Mardi Gras. You know? So anyway, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just making it through the week. You know, I have a few weeks where I'm not on the road, and it looked like it was going to be pretty smooth sailing, pretty relaxing. But actually had a busy week. Played a gig last week at Madame Vic's. I don't know if you've ever been there on Elysian Fields.
That's the S&M bar, right?
I think it used to be. I don't know. Maybe on other nights it is, but it's a beautiful restored, home, raised wooden home there on Elysian Fields.
So
anyway,
you're playing in someone's living room?
Well, it's a club now.
It's
been converted. Yeah. So anyway, played a gig there. Then with Los Tremolo Kings, Margie
nice.
Perez.
Oh.
And I guess it was the final night of that they're open this summer. It's a lot of clubs, you know, gets to be the middle of the summer. It's so dead, it doesn't even make sense to keep a club open certain places. So it's kind of really
kind of like this place.
Yeah, getting down into the low ebb there.
Cause it's fucking hot, man.
It's getting hot. It's getting hotter.
It's fucking been hot, man.
Been hot, getting hotter.
It's fucking so miserable.
Comfortable
man.
In here though. They got both AC units working.
Yeah, I have them working.
Right.
For now. You know, but
and then I played a going away party for this woman that runs the musicians clinic. Had a lot of musicians who don't have other health care. They're wishing her a happy retirement. Catherine, she's done the Lord's work over there.
My wife went to that.
She did. I saw your
she
wife
said
briefly.
That Catherine speech went way too long.
Well, she had a lot of people to thank,
yeah,
and she's
you know,
she's
like,
very friendly
like
person.
It's almost like the Oscars where they start the orchestra.
Get the
like,
hook.
Enough.
The player
enough.
Off. Yeah, yeah.
Come on, stop.
Well,
lasers.
After all the many years of service that she'd given the community, everyone
she
was happy
she didn't thank
to,
me, though,
to
did
hear
she?
Her. Well, she didn't. Should she have thanked you, man?
Yeah, I do that benefit every year for
okay.
the Musicians Clinic.
Okay, well,
I host that show.
Oh, right,
we
right,
raise
right, right.
money for the Musicians
Clinic. Oh, right, the
clinic.
Gong Show. That's
the
right.
The Gong
that's
Show.
Right, that's right. The Gong Show didn't come up, but I know she was thinking of you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I assume she was. So played that with John Mooney, our former guest, and he's still hanging in there. He's getting shorter all the time, but still plays great.
Well, that's good for him.
Yeah.
And that's good for her. They had a good time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just wanted to bring up, you know, Pride Month is almost over. So how does that make you feel?
Well, we talked about Pride Month before.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. But it's coming to an end.
Right,
so does anything different happen next month for you and your community?
It'll be next month will be about the same for me.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know if the people in the community are going to have how their months are going to go, but who knows? You know,
all right. Well, speaking of communities, mm-hmm. you know, we have this new governor.
Right.
Who's just, he wants
he's
to.
He's doing a bang up job.
Oh, man, this guy.
Jeff Landry.
Yeah, he's scary, man. This
guy.
Yeah,
how about that nonprofit thing?
Yeah. Don't worry about it. We'll get to that. But anyway, he just signed this bill that public schools have to have the Ten Commandments.
Right.
In the school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because it's to go back to, I guess, you know, purer times and better times and to help the kids. But the only problem I have with that is that the kids in the public school system don't know how to read anyway.
Sure.
So how the fuck are they going to read the Ten Commandments?
Right. That's a
they
good
don't
point,
know,
Manny.
You know, shouldn't covet thy neighbor's wife. But it doesn't say nothing about the husband with his hot, sweet asshole. You know, it doesn't say anything about that.
I think it's in there if you read the fine print. But but again, not the place of the public
because
schools.
Because wasn't there 15 and they somehow got rid of 5 of them?
I think that was in the History of the World or something, the Mel Brooks movie.
I think that was the general version.
Right.
But yeah, so who gives a fuck? You know, I don't care because my kid's out of public school,
sure.
So I don't give a fuck.
Okay.
You know, the kids can't read anyway. But he also signed in this thing, a castration bill.
I saw that, physical castration.
Yeah. This is just for jaywalking.
Oh, brother.
He's going to castrate you for jaywalking.
It took balls to do that.
Yeah, it took balls to go against two-ton cars and stuff like that. But, he's crazy going nuts, this guy.
Yeah.
And
he has he has free reign because he has, Republican majority in the legislature,
Baton Rouge City, Capitol.
So they're just a rubber stamp on whatever kind of foolishness he wants to do, and of course they're pulling public financing for different sorts of things, and that will be turned into tax cuts.
Yeah, so if you're a sex offender out there in Louisiana, be careful, man. This guy is going to castrate you for jerking off in public.
Right.
Which used to be a natural thing for people, men and women. Just jerk off in public.
Well, I did see that as part of that article. They said that they would potentially hold this penalty against women.
Yeah,
and have female genital mutilation as a penalty. And just today on the news, I saw that had two Slidell High School teachers were arrested. Two female Slidell High School teachers arrested for sexual contact with students. And I thought, at least it's not a Catholic school for a change. So that's good news for the archdiocese.
But don't you think once you leave like Orleans Parish and you hear about all these stories in the school system up north in the state, up down west in the state or down south or whatever you want to call it, don't you think that, these are all just cousins fucking each other?
Well, it could be. it could well be.
My cousin's teaching me English, and also I got her pregnant.
If that's the case, it'll all come out in the wash.
So the castration will start. I'd like to be there to see it. We should go do a podcast.
Oh, God.
That would be fun, I think.
It might be too much for me.
This guy's getting castrated. How do you feel about that?
It's too intimate.
And I think we should get some former guests on that show. If we get a chance. You'll pass.
I'll leave him at the door.
Yeah, anyway, okay. So I saw
as part of that, just to tag on, that somehow as part of this bill, vasectomies were one of the choices. And I thought, well, what kind of penalty is that? What is that? Just so you won't get
anybody pregnant?
As you sexually assault them? It didn't make any sense.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, he doesn't make any sense, this guy. Right. This guy's a nut job.
Yes.
And we got him for at least 8 years because he's going to win re-election.
Probably will. Yeah, unless feds get him, does something really stupid. Stupid. Well, speaking of politicians, do you have something else?
No, go ahead.
Politicians doing stupid things. Our mayor LaToya Cantrell. I'm sure you're familiar with she had this security detail. A police officer that she became
Fappy.
Romantically involved with him. They were spending overnights together in the city-owned apartment building. And then so the city finally, they've tried many times to keep them apart, but it's like Romeo and Juliet. They just keep, you cannot.
They love each other.
Love
is strong.
Love is strong. What do they say?
Remember our love for heroin?
Yes, I do.
Barry White was right.
You'll do anything.
The heart knows what it wants.
Right.
The heart knows what it wants.
So more recently, this guy was off the detail for a while, and then had a big investigation.
Right.
And then
I remember
then
all
he's
this.
Back
then
on the detail.
Right.
And then this woman comes out of her apartment down there somewhere in the French Quarter, and she looks out her window, and there's right across the street on a opposing balcony of this restaurant, the mayor and that same security officer hanging
officer
out there.
Vappy.
Hanging out, having a glass of wine.
Yeah,
they're there for like several hours laughing it up. Yeah. And she comes out and looks at him again. Now they notice her looking at them. They're laughing and smiling. And she recognizes the guy. She's thinking, this is so nervy. You've already been, you know, chastised for this. You know it's wrong. He's been the whole investigation. So she snaps a picture of him, sends it to Metropolitan Crime Commission, you know, this watchdog agency. And then the mayor,
what's his name?
Goyeneche. Rafael Goyeneche.
Yeah,
it's a hard name to pronounce, hard name to read. It's hard to know, but yeah, Goyeneche.
Andy, let me tell you. So he was hired to be on detail. He got back on detail.
He got back on detail.
Oh,
right? Okay, Steve.
What an interesting.
Wasn't going to say that, but sure. So they're there having cocktails, enjoying each other's company. Now, the woman takes a picture, sends it in. The mayor then brings suit, This finally came to the suit came. Well, she files for a restraining order,
yes.
And the woman is saying, "Geez, so I could potentially not even be able to come into my apartment if she's hanging out at this place
right across the street."
Anyway, so it came before a judge. The mayor didn't show up to testify. The judge wound up throwing out the case. It's ridiculous. And found for the woman. And awarded her court costs, which is like $30,000 this woman incurred defending herself against the mayor's frivolous suit. And then I heard just today on the news that today Officer Vappy retired.
Yes, he retired.
So make an attempt to retire before any disciplinary action takes place, which obviously if he's there drinking on the job and they can, you know, investigate.
I'm sure he's got his pension.
Find
golden
all
parachute.
That.
Yeah.
So, you know, the administration, this reminds me very much of the Reagan administration, where in the end, it starts to come apart, the relationship collapses, you know, like one investigation after another, because then she also had the 911 guy who she was defending for a long time.
And then he resigned,
under a cloud, and there's still all these investigations. There's a lot of loose strings going down there, man.
Well, you know, it's par for the course.
It's New Orleans.
Yeah, it's par for the course in this town.
Made for TV movie.
Yeah, you know, but I heard something really amazing over the weekend. This was something I heard over the weekend. I don't know, you probably heard this because it was a big news story. A 105-year-old woman got her master's degree.
I saw that.
From Stanford University. And the best thing about it is that her student debt will only be like a month.
Oh, God, Manny. The part of Shaky Green played by Manny Chevrolet. Oh, that's cold.
Yeah. So, congratulate to her.
We salute her.
You know, and I don't know if she, you know, okay, that was a good joke I wrote.
Better late than never. Better late than never.
Yeah. You know, but it also reminds me of today I just heard some high school principal who's a beloved high school principal somewhere on the North Shore. Did you hear this story?
No, I'm not sure.
He saw, this is crazy going nuts too. He was driving his car, and I think he's a retired high school principal because they said he was like in his 70s or something. He saw some guy in a wheelchair going up and down this street, destroying mailboxes and turning over trash cans.
Ugh.
So this guy gets out of his car and says, "You got a problem? What's your problem? I'm here to help." And this guy in this wheelchair beats the shit out of him.
Oh, Jesus.
So I don't know how you get beat the shit out of how someone who's in a wheelchair can beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even if you're in your 70s.
Seems like you'd be able to get away from
it. Yeah,
him,
I think
if you got one of those power chairs, those things can move, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't know. They didn't say that. The guy who was in the wheelchair was like in his 30s or 40s.
Well,
Sometimes
those wheelchair guys have the big
upper body strength. Those basketball tournaments the retarded Olympics. What do they call it? the handicap
Olympics.
Yeah, the Special Olympics.
Paralympic training center.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a documentary called Murder Ball about the basketball.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
Those guys are I mean, it's guys like Demolition ripped, man. Derby, man, and they are ripped.
Yeah.
You know, from the navel down, nap time. Yeah. Up, champion, it's two out of three falls.
Yeah.
Right.
So, anyway. Yeah. This...
How'd you like to have one of those guys on your back, man?
Oh, God.
just like all Popeye arms.
Hey, trust me.
Yeah. Anyway, so this principal got attacked and beaten up by this guy in the wheelchair who was destroying mailboxes and dumping over trash. Now, we don't know why he was doing that.
Yeah.
The principal wanted to know why.
Right.
And then he gets attacked. And then apparently, like a half hour later, they arrest this guy in the wheelchair. He's at a supermarket trying to steal things, and he's taking stuff off the shelves and tossing it all over and stuff like that.
That wacky Ray Nagin. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, so the thing was, is like, the way I looked at it was, is like, how does someone in a wheelchair get the best of you when you can just run away?
Right.
You know, well, like you just said, Steve, you know, those guys can be
where there's
pretty
a
good.
Wheel, there's a way. Sorry.
I set him up with that. Yeah,
it's the mushroom coffee, Manny.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that just happened. It was somewhere on the West
I'll
Bank
have to look
or the
out
North
for that.
Shore. I don't know, but...
we'll have to... I'd like to see the details of you know, how the guy did get... You'd think if the guy got to jump on you, I mean, but he was already...
This retired... Well, he might have had something because he was
destroying mailboxes. He might have, had a club.
That's a federal crime, too.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Destroying a mailbox?
Yeah, that's a federal crime.
Yes.
You know... I got off for that. You know.
Yeah.
My ex-wife's
because it was my own mailbox. I just
my ex-wife's boyfriend put a snake in mine once, so it is a federal offense.
Oh, okay.
How'd that turn out?
Good. We got divorced.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Well, you're better off without her.
Without it.
Yeah. Who needs?
Wow.
That
what
kind of
wonderful
stuff?
News in this wonderful city.
Yeah,
I sure
yeah.
love New Orleans.
Yeah.
I
sure
love it here.
Right.
It's a cartoon, but I love it.
Well, the night's not over, man.
No. It's early yet. Well, and tonight we have the debate, presidential debate going on.
Yeah, they're going to show it here tonight.
Oh, there it was.
Is that right?
There it was.
No, I don't think so.
No, it starts in about
5 minutes or something.
I don't know.
But I don't know. The jokes almost write themselves, you know, with these two guys.
Are they really going to arm wrestle?
Well,
I thought, you know, I was on the way here, it's like I was thinking about that debate, and I think it's Donald Gump versus Joe Bin Biden.
Oh, it's,
you know, I think it's, I would really like to watch. I'm going to watch the highlights because I think it's going to be hilarious.
It's a hillbilly smackdown.
Oh,
best two out of three falls, loser leaves town. You remember that?
Sure.
But apparently they've got all these rules where they cut off the mic.
You know, no kicking in the balls. Yep.
Because the last debate those guys had, it was just like, you know, arguing with your wife kind of stuff, you know.
No winners. Yeah.
No winners there, exactly. Yeah,
what if they find out that Trump was the guy in the wheelchair tearing up mailboxes? Where is it taking place, by the way? Salvage
Atlanta.
Yard?
Well, you know, it's like I was thinking, well, the most obvious joke would be like these two guys, you know, Trump and Biden. Who do you think's going to win? Depends.
Oh, man.
That's
stay
a good
down
one. Right?
Yeah. From that one.
He's been waiting 8 years to say that joke.
It's like a T. Ben Boudreau adaptation of another joke I heard somebody tell.
I thought,
you can retool that one for this.
Right. Well, I like it. Very
right.
good. Anyway, listen, last thing before we introduce our guest. I did not know this. I realized this last weekend. It was so brutally hot. I just stayed inside all day, and I was watching commercials, and... I did not realize this. Apparently, last Saturday, and apparently lots of cities do this that have beaches, it was National Fat Beach Day.
Oh, I saw that.
Did you see that?
I did see that.
Fat Beach Day, where these beaches all over the country, L.A., New York, Florida, they have a special day for fat people. To just do what they want to do on the beach.
Just to be fat.
Yeah, just hang out. And by looking at the photos, There was a lot of free sunscreen, apparently. And there was a lot of food and drink. And by looking at the photos, it didn't look good.
Yeah, well, it seems like every day is fat beach day when I go to the beach. It seems like no shortage of fat people.
But apparently
there.
This started back in the 60s.
Okay.
In New York City, where they had a fat in, they called it.
Yeah, okay. It was called Inflate to 22 Pounds and Seal. I remember that.
You remember back in the 60s in New York City?
Oh, yeah. Coney Island was...
And they burnt... They had a book burning of diet books.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. They burned diet books and stuff.
Dr. Atkins.
And pictures of Twiggy.
Wow.
They burnt pictures of Twiggy.
Really? What did she ever do to them?
Well, she was like...
It's not her fault.
Well, she was the norm because she was fashionable there.
She knows how to stop eating.
Remember back in the 90s where the heroin chic models with all the look and stuff?
I have to tell you this. My hero, the late Art Neville, had a great remark. We were in L.A. once, and they were doing some of this beach, and this rather obtuse woman was out there. So she bends over, and Art Neville says, "Looks like she's making balloon animals."
Oh, God.
Art Neville, God rest him, was one of the most wonderful people in
but
my world.
But then I thought to myself that, you know, Louisiana has been celebrating this for years, the Fat People Days. Because it's such an overweight state.
And Mississippi and Alabama, you know, the whole
land of lard-based food groups.
Redneck Riviera, you know.
Yeah. All right, but so you knew about it. This was something that was going on in the 60s.
Huh. This is the first year I've heard of it.
It's been going on since the 60s. And I think I'd like to gain some weight.
Okay.
I want to try to gain some weight.
How much weight are you looking to gain, man?
About 80 pounds.
Okay.
I'd like to be like about 80 pounds. I'm 143 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And during the pandemic, I gained 60 pounds.
Right.
But then you
wore it well because I could never really detect it. It must have been all muscle, you know.
I don't know. Yeah. But now I'd like to gain.
It's all dick.
it's all cock, yeah. It's all cock, man. That's right, baby. Maybe. But this time it's not going to be.
Okay.
Dana has some literature for you, Manny.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk later, Dana.
But, okay.
Yeah, I'd like to think of it as gaining weight.
Uh-huh.
I just think of it, if it's at my age, having my new body.
There you
sure.
go.
Yeah, it's my new body.
Members only.
Well, that's it.
It's members only tonight. Yeah,
that's right. Because
remember that
you get our age, who cares anymore?
Manny's a members only guy.
I have plenty of jackets.
He likes those jackets.
Did you have the Sasson jeans?
I'm the only member too.
Did you any of have the Sasson jeans? I did all the boxing work.
Oh no, I don't do the jeans.
The guy that owns Sasson jeans, Paul Gez. He had an apartment in the Olympic Tower upstairs where the Onassis is, and I was there. And
in
it was
Greece?
A big pile of pink fish scale, 25 pounds at least on this table.
Cocaine you're talking about.
Well, you said that not.
Okay, all right.
So I'm sitting there, and here's Grace Jones. And
are they putting magnets in this fish to get the championship?
But
where was that? In Greece?
It's time for you to go.
No. This was on Fifth Avenue.
On Fifth Avenue.
Next to St. Patrick's Cathedral with the Onassis.
All right.
And Jackie was there.
She was the book editor at Doubleday when
I did
my John Coltrane book.
And she was a crack whore back then, right?
No,
or
she
just
was
a crack
wonderful.
Addict.
She was wonderful. She was beautiful and very evasive. She never spoke. She was like Wayne Shorter.
Okay.
You know, I did two tours with Weatherport.
She never spoke because the mob told her not to, right?
He was Mr. Gone. That was his nickname.
Yeah.
He was Mr. Gone, but he was a genius, and I miss him terribly.
Oh, yeah, Wayne was something else, man. So was Jackie O, man. She was a.
She personified.
What did the O stand for?
Onassis.
Oh, I thought it was something else.
But Bouvier was her maiden name.
Yes,
Jacqueline Bouvier.
Oh.
Some kind of a blue blood family, the Bouviers.
She used to walk down Fifth Avenue coming to. I was working in Doubleday Books when I was going to art school. No bodyguards, no nothing. But when he was around,
Onassis.
He was on. He had about 15 military looking.
Because people hated him.
The first time
he had enemies.
You know that fake plastic hand you see in Secret Service now? The first one I ever saw was early 70s with one of his bodyguards. They have a fake plastic hand because their hand is on their gun.
Wow.
And they would travel with diplomatic immunity. Huh. They weren't even American.
I heard about a guy that had one of those fake plastic hands so he could go and steal jewelry. at jewelry stores.
There were a lot of them in the porno movies in those days too. Oh, okay. Never mind. Just, no, Manny, the wait a minute. I recognize Manny.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe we should introduce our guest.
Something else.
Yeah.
Since I've taken over the show.
Yeah, no. Let's introduce our guest.
Yeah, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's a terrific guy. We actually this is a part two for our guest here. We had him on earlier this year, maybe about 20 episodes back or so. He's a terrific portrait artist, illustrator, bass player, photographer. He studied at the Art Students League of New York and the Portrait Society at Carnegie Hall. He was a former New York Times illustrator and New York Yankees art director for about 15 years or so. Also, is the illustrator for Madison Square Garden and illustrated like something like a 26 world title fights there. And at other arenas around the world, he's been friends of princes and kings and
paupers.
Everybody in between. Without further ado, the great Mr. Steve Lowery.
Glad to be here.
Welcome back, Steve.
Well, thank you,
Steve.
Manny.
Now get out.
Yes. No.
So
you're making me homesick.
So, Steve, we in your first episode, and everybody can go back and look that up to get the. I know you're from Birmingham, Alabama, right? Your family, like I believe your father worked on a reservation teaching or something.
No, he was a Strategic Air Command.
Okay, all right, that's right. Y'all were out there in the West, in
the rugged West,
and like around Los Alamos or something.
No, he flew over from Russia over. Russia from Cheyenne. He was a reconnaissance air.
He did the Bering Strait
spy plane.
Yeah,
right,
was it
right,
the Bering
right, right.
Strait.
He was like that. I never knew him.
Like that guy that got shot down and
Gary Powers.
Gary Powers.
Yeah, that was the Cuba stuff, from what I remember. I never knew him. He died at 82 years later. He left when I was 7, or my mother left because she just couldn't put up with it. They were kind of the right stuff guys before the right stuff.
Right.
And when they did come back and made it successfully, they did a couple of things that my mom wasn't happy with.
They were out carousing.
Cowboys.
Sure. Yes.
But he was a great man.
I remember you telling us about.
Right.
He was a great man.
So you, but you grew up in Birmingham and you wind up showing talent and getting a scholarship to New York School.
Yep.
And talk about the fickle finger of fate, where you're you know.
I know it well.
Salvador Dali comes and you have a whole story in the first episode about you studying with him some. He providing a sketch of him for one of his books and
his autobiography. Yeah.
Fascinating.
He was wonderful. He was totally unaffected by all this cartoon persona that, you know, everybody has their shtick, as they used to say. Yeah. His was the funny mustache, but he was a very hard working. I mean, nobody has a body of work like that without working incredibly hard.
Yes.
And he had the best remark about religion I have ever heard.
Okay.
He used to come over to the league. I met him when I was working at Doubleday Books on Fifth Avenue, and he was living at the St. Regis part of the year. And a woman was talking to him one time about he should have been a better Catholic. And, he says, the true church is in the center of the heart of the man that believes. And I did a sketch of him one afternoon, the third or fourth time I met him, and he was real big on the King of Spain had given him the Cross of Malta. Mm. The last artist to get that was Velázquez, and he was very prideful of that.
Sure.
And he made it known. He said, Picasso never got this because he moved to Spain and became a communist.
Yeah.
But moved to Paris, excuse me.
Uh-huh.
But he was absolutely wonderful to me. I had a fire in New York, and I lost a lot of photos, but there were a couple of dozen photographs of me with him, and he was just so kind and gracious, and I watched him draw. He came into Doubleday and made a copy of Mademoiselle d'Avignon by Picasso, and of course it was perfect. But he had a terrible end. He was signing blank pieces of paper, and interesting story.
Why is this?
Because the art world sucks. It's a great cultural endeavor, and I love it with all my heart, but it's a lousy fucking business.
Had he served his purpose? I mean, did they feel like he was a man beyond, or what was
Gala, who was a Russian countess, was his business manager, and he'd come in with paint all over a pair of women's tennis shoes, and she'd come in July in a floor-length mink because she was Russian dignitary. Yeah. You'd be sweating buckets, but she was always this Iron Maiden. And he was just down to earth, very hardworking, very industrious. And he was taken advantage of. When she died, he kind of lost it. Oh, and then the hoodlum showed up.
Mm.
Fake dollies. But an interesting thing that didn't bring up the first time, when Elon Musk sold eBay to PayPal or vice versa, whatever, he started a movie production company, and he hired Al Pacino was going to play Dolly. Mm. And that, the only reason I know, they called me because I had done 6 or 8 other drawings of him. And it fell apart. I don't know what happened to it, but you can look in the IMDb catalog and all that. It's there, and I'm sure he would have been great.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be a good picture.
I saw the movie 3-4 years ago, but wasn't the same.
And no.
I was at the Dolly Museum.
So they made the movie without Pacino?
No, it fell apart. I don't know what happened.
So what movie was made?
Well, there was one made, but it wasn't the Al Pacino. I don't know. I've never met him. If I would, I would sure ask him about it.
I think Danny DeVito would have been a good one to play.
Well, I was at the Dolly Museum in St. Petersburg, and we had a wonderful interview, and I talked about him, and he was just, I've been very blessed and very lucky, but he's sure in my top 10 people that I've ever met that was just royalty to me.
Yeah.
And he was so kind. I got sick once, and he came over. And there was $200 in my couch, and it's hard to talk about it to this day. I was the first year in New York, starving to death, eating knishes every day and no heat, and 50 retired merchant seamen living in the Mount Royal rooming house. The bathroom was down the hall, and it was one of
y'all were close friends.
Yeah, yeah. If I ever hear, they'd get drunk and sing South of the Border, Down Mexico Way, at the top of their lungs in the middle of the night, and there'd be fights, and they'd be rowing down the steps. It was kind of like New Orleans. It was a train wreck.
That sounds a place I lived in Vegas was that way.
Huh.
Vegas is that way right now.
Yeah, I lived in this fucking dump.
What were you doing living in Vegas?
Witness protection kind of thing. And,
but he was wonderful. And to begin this venture, I started playing in the beer joints, or the upholstered latrines, as we lovingly called them.
Okay.
When I was 14, I was a singer, and a very good singer until puberty.
All right.
And one of my heroes was Rodney Justo, the singer with the Candyman, and now the ARS. And he did the Pretty Woman. He was a kid with Roy. He was Roy. The Candyman were Roy Orbison's road band.
Okay.
Anyway, Graham Nash produced them. Their first album. They were in Studio B at Abbey Road. In Studio A, McCartney was doing Penny Lane.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm 75 and I just went through the worst physical year. But all this stuff is coming back, and I'm adding stuff to the book. And, nobody's had a more royal ride than me, and I'm glad to be here and knowing people like Aaron Neville and y'all. I got to tell you this, Renee. I've heard the beauty of New Orleans is you got to be a chameleon. I've heard you in 4 different types of bands, and everything, you nail it, and it's like you grew up in this band. And that's a professional musician.
Oh, thank you, Steve.
I've seen the best. You know,
I know you have.
Pastorius, come on. You are a certified badass.
Well, that's
and my only real regret on this city, other than not being able to stay here for any length of time without falling apart, is I never came to see the Iguanas at the Circle Bar. I was handed a copy of that 9-volt battery.
Right, 9-volt heart. Yeah.
And First Kiss Is Free. I saw the band, and I've seen Los Lobos. You were everything those bands are. You were one of the great American music bands, and I love Rod, and I love all y'all. And getting to hear you that time, it was somewhere up north somewhere, I can't remember, was a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you, Steve. That's very kind. It means a lot to me.
Where were we? Vasectomies, I've had 2.
Okay, really?
Yeah, I have. Cherokee Indian breeding.
First one didn't take, I guess,
right? No, the doctor said the bad news, and I had to play that night.
Strong.
The first time I was fine. The second time I carried 2 bowling balls around for a week. It was terrible.
Oh, it was terrible.
Black and blue.
Sensitive area. Yeah. No,
sensitive topic.
Yeah.
Well, when you get our age, you know, and your age, you got to look down there often.
Well, I'm studying the Oriental art of one hung low. That's me.
Okay. Hey.
Anyway.
I know
Manny,
that.
You bring out the best in me, Pat.
Sure.
All right, where were we?
I hear that.
Well, so just to recap a little bit, so you get up to New York and talking about the fickle finger of fate, how, you know, you're doing illustrations for the New York Times, just trying to make rent, trying to keep it all together. And George Steinbrenner sees some of your work and calls you into to the New York Yankees offices. Now, we talked a little bit about that last time. You kind of talked about that story, but was like Billy Martin part of the organization at that point?
Oh, of course. He was the heart and soul of that team.
So Billy Martin famously got like hired and fired.
Five times.
Was Steinbrenner trying to be the fucking show.
Right.
Well, George had a rule. He paid good money and he expected it. Funny thing, his ABC Shipbuilding bought all their steel from Birmingham, where I'm from, and I painted a $90,000 Bösendorfer for piano for Miss Beverly McNeil, who owned O'Neill Steel, to look like it was marble, and I cried. I said, "Ma'am, there's 22 coats of polished, you know, concert grand," and she says, right, "Honey, we just use it for knickknacks."
just an end table.
I didn't grow up that way, you know. I grew up country and dirt poor, and I'm happy for. I mean, it made me what I was. But I had a 4-year scholarship. My first wife, who I got out of Birmingham because of a bad father, got very sick, and I left school. And I pounded. It was winter, and I pounded the streets for 5 months, and then the Times took a chance on me. And I'd go to cattle calls with my little book, and I'd be competing with my teachers.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was the golden age. Today is the anniversary of the passing of Milton Glaser, one of the greatest geniuses of design in the history of the world. 29 steps to his office. I know every fucking step because I'd go up there just to touch the hem of his garment and listen to what he would say. And I was so eager to learn. I didn't want to, you know, I left a very good band, Wayne Perkins, that did all that Bob Marley, Joni Mitchell stuff. Mm-hmm. And I cried all the way to New York on the flight. Did I do the right thing? And I'm going, well, yeah, you kind of know. And it wasn't like it was a career path. That's a joke. There is no such thing. You know.
Sure.
I think the higher power, whoever, Betty White, God, whatever, puts things in your path. And if you pay attention and, you know, if you want to have fun, go over here. Here's all this crazy shit that'll kill you. Here's stuff that'll make you better. And I said, I want to be the greatest artist I can be. And the Times sent me, my first assignment was the first Ollie Frazier fight. And they sat me next to Leroy Neiman, and I was fucking terrified. And listen to this, talk about the humanity. He put his arm on my shoulder and he said, "You're Steve Larry." He said, "I look in the Sunday Times to see your work." And it made me just relax. And we spent many great adventures. I just gave all my artwork and did a 2-hour interview at the Muhammad Ali Learning Center in Louisville, Kentucky.
Wow.
And it's full of Neimans, and I can see him and I can hear him talk. You know how you go hear somebody that you really has touched you as a player and it stays with you?
Sure.
You know, any number of people. And speaking of that, I hit New York in 68. I used to go to Steve Paul's scene. It'll never be. I went to the Fillmore in the 3 years, the Fillmore East, Bill Graham's place. In the 3 years that was there, I must have done 70 shows.
Yeah.
$3.50 a ticket. And when the Madison Square Garden started putting on, they kind of outgrew him. Mm-hmm. He said, "There's no way I'm charging $10 a ticket. I'm closing this fucking place." That was the reason why.
Yeah.
But he was extremely kind to me, except for the night of the Band of Gypsies when I lost my press credential. And he wouldn't let me in. And the only reason I got in, it was snowing, it was nasty. David Clayton Thomas got thrown out for being high and obnoxious. And Bill, he says, "I got room for one." And he pointed at me, and I went in and walked right into Jimmy.
Nice.
And those two shows, the first show, good, Jimmy, showbiz, shtick. And I heard Bill ripped him in the dressing room and just said, you're better than that.
Oh, I heard Bill Graham tell that story. You saw both of those shows?
I was at the 70 show.
Yeah, I've heard him tell that story on TV.
I've got drawings. I've done it. My best painting of that, my best portraits of Aaron Neville, but the best painting I ever did was of Jimi Hendrix, simply because I went straight home that night. I didn't have any music on or anything, and just what I had seen and heard, He was like Galileo. He went where nobody has ever gone before.
Okay.
Like Pistorius, like yeah. Coltrane, like Charlie Parker.
Right, right, right.
You know, Pistorius, the Blade Runner?
No. Pastorius, the bass player from Florida.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Special Olympics Blade Runner.
No.
Who murdered his wife.
The movie's better than he is. Yeah. Anyway, I was in Deerfield Beach last year. I went to do the Daytona race, and I put flowers on his grave. I knew the 2 years, 2 years and 2 months he was in New York, I knew him very well.
Yeah.
And there's a story that I have that I'm going to put it in the book. I was there when they fired him, and it was not good. And I knew then that it was pretty much... They said, well, you know, what do you got to say? I said, well, to be honest, I've been planning his funeral from the day I met him, because New York, he was already... But I got to tell you, I sat in a studio instrument rental studio when he was rehearsing Word of Mouth, steel pans, drums, guitar, bass, anything he picked up.
Yeah.
He's playing guitar on an Ira Sullivan album you got to hear with Red Roddy and those guys. This guy could blow on anything.
Yeah, I heard that. Because like when he was on the Wayne Cochran band, they said, so you had Charlie Brent was the music director and guitar player. And Charlie Brent is another guy who could play every instrument.
You know, I missed him by 4 months.
So they say the only thing Charlie didn't play drums, and Jaco could play drums. So between them, they could play every instrument on the band just
from
about.
What I understand, Charlie was very instrumental in helping his arranging skills, and Charlie had it all.
Well, yeah,
and he lived here while I did, and I never knew it.
Yeah. Wait a minute, are you still talking about Jimi Hendrix?
Well, we're talking about Jaco Pastorius. We jumped the same.
To me, and a lot of people may slap me for saying it, but Pastorius, he was Jimmy on bass.
He's a very landmark, innovative bass player.
He changed the vocabulary of what a bass player does.
Absolutely. You know, and actually ruined a lot of bass players because everybody heard Jaco and said, oh, that's what I want to do. Well, you know what? That's what Jaco can do. That's not how every bass player should play.
It infected a lot of people.
Yeah, no, it ruined a lot of people, you know.
You know a great gig that comes to mind? I went to see Dr. John one night at the Lone Star, and the band was Steve Gadd, John Schofield, Jaco. There were two other players. There was a percussionist from New Orleans named Tri-T, I think, and Matt was just... He could hardly stand up.
Yeah.
He was so out of it. He gets up for 2 hours. He'd always come out and do a kind of a solo intro.
Uh-huh.
He played a whole set, and the Schofielders, they're going, they don't need us. I listened to the whole history of what New Orleans piano has meant to the world in that man. I think he was a certified genius. I saw him many times, and I called him. I wanted to make some drawings of him to do a painting when I first got down here because it hit hard. I mean, I've never been that invested in my soul with what New Orleans music did, more so than New York. New York was a crazy quilt.
Right.
New Orleans was... Anyway, he says, okay, Larry, pick me up on Rempard Street. And I'm driving around looking for Rempard Street. It's raining. He's standing on the corner of Rempard Street. Larry, goddammit, don't you speak English? I said, well, yeah, when I hear it. And we became friends, and I miss him terribly. But, man, what a life. He'd come to Birmingham, and I'd go see him, and he'd play a little piano bar solo. I didn't care, because he had a whole orchestra on 88 keys. He was just incredible. You ever work with him, Renee?
I played on a Willie DeVille record.
Oh, nice. Meet DeVille.
With Mac, yes.
Yeah.
Willie DeVille came down here and made a record of all New Orleans tunes.
Sweet.
And Mac played. I played on like 10 out of 11 songs.
Oh,
and
nice.
Mac played on 2 or 3 of
nice.
Them. But it was all like Sammy Burfecht, Johnny Vodakovich.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Hey, you know, tonight's...
One after another.
Let me interject. Tonight's Johnny's 75th birthday. We're going to go to the Maple
Johnny
Leaf
Vodakovich,
and raise the roof.
Happy birthday to Johnny Vodakovich.
Yes,
75 years old. 75 years young.
You
never be another. One of the greats.
And another difference in New Orleans and New York, everybody up there was a little bit guarded and standoffish, and you're here to steal a geek. Down here, everybody has been so inviting. I slept on... When I first came here... I was broke. I sure. had made a career
What's
change.
The South? You know, well, you can't expect anything
I
different.
Slept on Art Neville's couch. You know, they were just, they took me in. And the first night I went to see him at Tipitina's, I'm going, that's the painting. And that's the premise of this thing that's coming up next April that I can't really talk much about.
Okay.
It's my biggest and last show. And then I'm going to buy a strip joint in Belize. And y'all two are going to come. You'll be in the okay. house band and Manny will be the MC.
I like it. I like it.
You won't get
way.
Paid, but you'll have a hell of a lot of fun.
Okay.
Going to Belize.
Okay.
Thank you for the info.
But Manny, seems like a good time to take a little break.
Yeah, we're at the halfway point of the show, Steve. So let's, Trouble Nation knows what to do. We'll be right back.
Driving up on 99, you should have heard the teardrops fly. Fat fruit hanging on the trees and a cotton dress up to her knees. I said, touch me, baby, I'm all alone. I'd like to make your love my home. Cause it sure is sweet, this highway air, but not as sweet as your blossom hair. She said, babe, the first kiss is free. She said, babe, the first kiss is free. She's an oaky paradise, a Mexican dream, heart like silver, lips like cream. Looked at me with a crazy smile, said I'd like to stick around a while. She said, babe.
Oh, and we're back. Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yeah.
I am Renee Coleman.
You
back,
are.
Back with our guest, Mr. Steve Lowry.
Really?
Now, Steve, yeah, he's still here. Now, Steve, I know you're well familiar with the show, and you know that we are operating as a listener-supported project. And to that end, we have the PayPal and the Venmo links and the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook post, that pinned post at the top there. And, you know, I often thank the listeners that have supported us that week. Well, we don't have any listeners who have supported us just this week, but we're kind of running on fumes from some previous support. And as always, we have the Patreon patrons that are there supporting us week in and week out. The link for the Patreon page, if you want to be a real soldier in the troubled army, can sign up for that right there. The links are there. Also, we have the Troubled Men Podcast t-shirts. Those are available in all the popular sizes and colors, men's and women's styles.
I'd like to purchase one tonight.
Okay, well, you'll have to go online for that. We don't carry it's a print on demand operation.
Okay.
And also
POD it's called.
Yeah, POD, print on demand.
Yes.
Not
which could take up to like 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could. Good. Yeah. So don't waste any time if you're
don't waste your money either.
Okay. Oh, no, well, sure. It's not a waste.
Can I get one without the three sleeves?
Sure. There you go.
Yeah. You can take those sleeves off.
I'll proudly wear it.
But we're gonna have a new product out soon.
It's the G-string.
Trouble Men urinal discets.
Yeah. Those are going to be popular. Yeah.
Whose face is on that?
Well, both our faces.
I like that.
All right, so you can piss on us.
There you go.
Okay.
You know, but it's got a nice grapefruit scent.
There you go.
We decided on grapefruit over lemon.
Yeah.
Well, it's all kind of
it's more exotic.
You know?
Yeah. Well, the grapefruit,
exactly.
It's like the Paloma. It's kind of a drink of the show. Anyway, back to the so. Also follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Helps out a lot. Costs you nothing. And I'll be going out with the Iguanas and also Sonny Landreth in July, so you can look for those dates on my my own Facebook page or wherever. Anyway, enough of that. Back to our guest, Mr. Steve Lowry. Now, Steve, I know, you know, through your illustrating work with the, you're very close to the boxing community. You've been friends with Roberto Durand, right?
Yes.
Close to him.
Yes.
Close to Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
Now, when you were with Ali at training camp, is that Big Bear?
Deer Lake.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us what that was like. What was the, how long would you be there? How long would he be there? How much would you see? What was the routine there? Did you hang around him a lot? Did they have girls coming in? I'm interested.
No,
just tell us.
He was very strict. He adhered to a very strict code of conduct because of his religious beliefs.
Okay.
Because, you know, he did all the talking and ticket selling and showbiz and the shtick, but he was extremely hardworking, especially the month before a fight. He was serious. And Ali, there were two Alis. There was one that was the beautiful Greek god, physically and spiritually wonderful, and there was a guy that knew how to hurt you, and he was very good at it. And he didn't like, I put it this way, he had a woman's hands. And Dr. Ferdy Pacheco, they used to shoot his between every finger with lidocaine. Because these are not punching hands like Sonny Liston.
Really?
He paid the price. You know, I don't buy the theory it was Parkinson's. Pacheco left 5 years before Dolly retired. He just couldn't take it. You can't get hit in the head that many times and not have CTE or whatever.
Well, he had all those fights at the end that were kind of gimmick fights, and the whole rope-a-dope thing, you know, you're absorbing all this punishment.
That was a genius thing. It
worked, but I'm saying there was a price to be paid. You know, you're absorbing a lot of head trauma.
Well, boxing was actually my favorite sport to cover, but for two reasons. The boxers live a real monastic existence. They have to. They don't do, you know, I mean, they run around. I went out many late nights with Ken Norton the night before the Holly fight at Yankee Stadium. We were at 3 o'clock in the morning at a disco.
So Ken Norton was not living the monastic lifestyle.
No.
Okay.
And he suffered.
But was that the fight that he beat Ali?
He won, but they gave it to Ali because Ali was the marquee, and he was not happy.
But Norton broke his jaw.
That was in the first fight.
Okay, yeah. Okay,
Yankee Stadium, I did all the artwork. Just to begin, I went to a Sunnyside Gardens, a little club fight place, you know, and between fights, there was a young band called Cool and the Gang playing over in the corner, you know, Cool, Gary Cool and all. I became great. The guys were dancing around on
cool
the linoleum and stuff, sliding around, Melly Mel and all that. That was the beginning of all that stuff.
Okay.
Brooklyn, Queens were the incubator. Anyway, I got to be friends with some of the club fighters. And then the very first assignment that I got from the Times was the Ali Frazier fight at Madison Square Garden.
The first one?
The first one. The classic.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it was they cut a deal where I was doing editorial work for them and I was doing advertising art for Madison Square Garden. John Francis Xavier Condon, who ran boxing, who was my hero, he introduced me to Jimmy Cagney years later.
Nice.
Yeah, out in Connecticut. Anyway, training camp, it was no nonsense. They used to have people, runners, that would bring in sparring partners that kind of copied the opponent. They you know, they're training. They brought in this kid from Pennsylvania, and Ali was working with him and taught him the jab that retired him. It was Larry Holmes.
Yeah.
And Ali schooled him in the very that fight, Larry, he was crying and begging the ref to stop it because Ali was defenseless. And I'll put it this way, boxing is one of the most incredibly beautiful cultural endeavors, but probably the lousiest fucking business there is. I worked with Don King at ABC Sport. It just is. They prey on uneducated.
Well, isn't that like that horrible scene in that movie Django Unchained?
I hadn't seen
where these rich people are watching two black people just kill each other. You see that movie?
Sure, I did see that. Yeah.
And isn't that what boxing is back in the 80s and 90s? All these rich people would be in Vegas watching these poor black guys beat the shit out of
you. You want to hear something that I've never told anybody, and this is not this is true?
Yeah, I want to
Don
hear
Don King wanted to stage a bout between the two Sphinx brothers chained together called Battle Royale. And, of course, it did not fucking fly.
The two Sprinks brothers fighting each other?
Michael and Leon, yeah.
With a chain.
Oh, no, yeah.
You know, Don was cold-blooded, but
yeah,
that,
man.
And
would have sold tickets.
Where is Don King today? Is he still alive?
He's elderly. He's close to being a billionaire.
What's he promoting these days?
Himself.
Okay, well that's all you have to do.
Look, there's a great picture of me and him and Duran the day after Duran beat Leonard in Montreal. We partied like soldiers. I'm wearing one of Duran's shirts.
I love that fight.
Well, Leonard was great. Leonard got $1 million, and Duran had never made really any real money until then. But Leonard made the mistake of trying to fight with a fighter, and Duran, to me, was the greatest pure fighter ever been around.
Beautiful.
Fighter, not boxer. He, of course, he could box, and he was a great defensive.
Well, he knocked out a horse, too.
Well, he broke his fingers. He broke two fingers doing that. I love him. He was in a bad car wreck about 8 months ago, and he had to have heart surgery, and it broke all these bones in his body. And I couldn't. I was in the hospital. He came to St. Louis, where Leon was from. They had a big deal about
Roberto, you're talking about.
Yes. Uh-huh. And he came, still on the mend. And I heard he talked about time he spent with Leon. And Leon was this kid that came from nowhere. I was in Montreal in 76. Cosell talked about how bad the dressing rooms. I'm not a Cosell fan. The dressing room smells. These are fucking world champions soon to be. Now, when they started winning, he was their best friend, and he taught them how to fight. Now, that's horseshit. These kids, and the beauty of that sport is you're one punch from changing the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's be wealthy or you're carried out.
Right.
But why I lost favor with it, two things. I started seeing my friends like Wilfredo Benitez, who can't even speak anymore. He's in a... his aunt's bedroom. One of the most beautiful, classically trained. He was a master of defense. If he could have punched, he'd have been champion forever. Of the four greats of that period, he was surely the fifth, but they don't include him.
And who were the four?
Hagler, Hearns, Duran, Leonard.
All right.
But the Leonard, the Hearns-Duran fight, I love Tommy Hearns, but he had a 14-inch reach advantage and 11 inches in height. That's not a fucking fight.
That's
but
not
but
fair,
Duran,
yeah.
Duran wasn't scared of anybody, but he had no chance. He had no chance. The whole second fight, I was in Montreal when he won, and I was here in New Orleans when he lost. He gained 43 pounds and had to cut that weight in five weeks.
Oh, Jesus.
And he cut it down right at it, and the morning of the fight, he ate two big steaks and drank a bunch of orange juice. And he got in the ring, and he shit himself. And he told Leonard that no moss, he never said that. He said what amounted to, you can have the title, but you're not going to humiliate me. He was a man. And he would have been knocked out because he couldn't even lift his arms. He was out of shape.
Right.
He was steam bathed to death. That's what knocked him out.
Yeah. You're exhausted after a cut like that.
He's one of the greatest. He's one of the greatest people. But I can tell you stories. I remember when Pepino Cuevas came to Madison Square Garden. He had just won the title, and he bought 150 pairs of shoes for his village.
Wow.
You know, I mean, that touches me.
Sure.
To be honest.
Remember where they came from, these
sports
fighters.
Subsidized
by
music
art. Yeah, boxing's a crooked sport.
Oh, no shit.
For sure.
Yeah.
Look,
I mean, I remember seeing my grandfather was a big Cuevas
fan. Those were the Frankie Carbo days.
And they
ran them.
And I remember taking my grandfather back in L.A., to see a Cuevas fight at the Forum. It was like a fight. Mm-hmm. And the whole fucking Forum was sold out. And
greatest fans in the world, Mexico.
Cuevas came out, and he was fighting this ranked fighter, apparently. And
execution.
And it was over within like 30 seconds. Yeah. And then the replay showed that Cuevas never hit him. The guy just fell down.
Probably out of fear.
Yeah, you know, Cuevas.
Anything that can happen wrong, illegal, semi-legal, whatever goes on in that sport, because there's total gray area.
Well, it's
the governing bodies,
right?
You got guys like Don King running.
Stuff. Right, and it's the judging is subjective, supposedly, even though they're supposed to have point system.
The Marquess of Queensbury died 300 years ago.
Right, exactly. But mixed martial arts now, UFC, it's very popular.
Yeah, can't stand it.
You can't stand it. I'm a big fan personally. But
if you can kick a guy in the nuts while he's laying on the floor, that's a bar fight.
You can't do that. That's not illegal. That's
well, you can kick him in the head, which is worse.
No, not when he's down. Oh. Anyway, we won't litigate this here.
Okay.
I would say, people see that as a brutal sport. No one has ever died in an MMA fight, whereas people, I think maybe like 10 or 12 people die a year from boxing.
Well, if you fight bare knuckles, the difference is the compression. A padded hand is going to cause more brain damage than a knuckle. A knuckle's going to hurt you, not cut you. But a 12-ounce glove, the compression on your brain pain.
Well, no one's died yet, Renee. They're going to die. They're going to feel it later.
Well, no,
I'm saying, I'll tell you a great story. I had to go to the USFL meetings. By the way, I have a check from Donald Trump for a painting that he bought that bounced bigger than fucking hell.
Really?
And my attorney had it. My attorney dies. It was probably worth 10 times as a...
Just as a souvenir.
Yeah, souvenir. Anyway, I went to the meetings down in Tampa, and superstar Billy Graham and Ken Norton and I went out in Superstar's powder blue Rolls one night. He tore the right quarter panel off. We were so drunk and high. We were going to this triple... Superstar had invested in this three stories. It was a cockfight pit in the basement, a disco here, disco here, and a whorehouse on top. And we went out there. It was called, I can't remember the name of it now, but that was a wild world. But the Gulas brothers in Birmingham used to put on wrestling, and it sold out the Civic Center there. I mean, boxing would come, and we'd get, 2,000. Every wrestling, as they called it.
Sure.
Bruno Sammartino and the Mad Turk and, anyway, it's entertainment, nothing wrong with it.
Sure, sure. But I was going to say, even now where, you think, well, eyes are on it, you still see boxing matches on television where it's obviously totally rigged, man.
Let me tell you something.
One guy wins and they give the
But isn't the other WWE stuff the same thing, you think?
Well, I mean,
that is scripted.
Professional wrestling is fake, but UFC
even that
is not,
UFC is not rigged?
No, absolutely.
Let me end my take on boxing with this. Some of the greatest moments of my career were covering boxing, but then at the end, like this Deontay Wilder.
You don't think the NFL's rigged? Major League Baseball's rigged? The NBA's rigged?
Manny, let me
go to Game 7 and all that kind of stuff?
Well, no, I think that they definitely do put...
All right,
put,
so you're saying this one sport that you like is not rigged?
Well, I would say any kind of sport where you have judging, it's always subject to...
PayPal.
To some funky business.
Yeah.
Okay.
So...
But Manny, the word is not rigged. The word is staged. They give them the perfect opponent for them, like you said, with
Cuevas. I agree. They do the same thing with the UFC. Staged opponents. Yep. Like somebody, yes.
For example, here's how I'll end my chapter on boxing. Okay. Some of the absolute greatest moments, Reggie hitting three, were title fights. The drama, the human story, it was on the waterfront every week. But... things like Deontay Wilder, who was the heavyweight champion, 49 knockouts, but 47 of those fighters were not even ranked in the top 300. He was knocking out nursing home patients. I mean, what the holy fuck?
Now,
My grandmother could beat these people.
Now, did you see the Deontay Wilder...
the last three fights?
Tyson Fury fight?
Where... all three of them, yeah. Well, Fury, being a gypsy, he's been fighting since he got out of the cradle. He can fight, and he's the best heavyweight in the world. Not Usyk. He is. But he's
so
got.
Did you see that fight?
I saw all three of them. Not live. I watched them.
Right. I mean the Fury Usyk fight. I'm talking about the
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Where
yeah. And he
Fury
blanked,
just lost
he,
it.
But I think that was staged because I'm trying to be kind with my words. The Saudis. The rematch was signed a month before that fight.
Right. So
he took he laid on the ropes and let the guy pound on him because he knew he couldn't hurt him. Usyk is a good fighter, but he's out of his
weight
class.
So that was done in Riyadh, right? Saudis underwrote the whole thing.
There's a term called sport smoothing where they want to show they're nice
sports
people.
Sports washing,
while,
yes.
Yeah, while they're beheading women in the square for nothing, and we won't go there. But bottom line, I miss boxing, but too many of my friends are damaged, and I don't believe that anybody should profit or enjoy the misery of others. That's what attorneys do. Yeah, think about it. You're not an attorney, are you, Manny?
No.
Okay.
Well, I like the sweet science. I enjoy some...
If you ever read A.J. Liebling, I'm going to give you an A.J. Liebling book. It is poetry. He's the greatest boxing writer in history. I worked with three. By the way, you know who wrote the articles for IA Illustrated on the Ollie Frazier fight? Norman Mailer. Who thought he was a boxer.
Right.
And he got
the
shit beat out of him at Gleason's one afternoon.
He used to beat the shit out of his women. He used to beat
the
shit out
of his women. Well, that too. And that guy that got out of prison. You remember that? That he got out of prison. Anyway. But he was a pretend fighter. He was a great writer, though. I'll give him that. But he wrote the articles that I illustrated.
Yeah, I remember somebody talking about Mailer coming up to him in a party and going, punch me in the stomach. The guy's like, what the fuck are you talking? He goes, punch me in the stomach. Come on, try.
I wish somebody would do a book. I was really blessed to know Cus D'Amato, Ray Arcel, Freddie Brown. These were the guys that, I mean, Ray Arcel and Freddie Brown had 61 world champions, including Marciano. They worked with the Petronellis.
It was, now, how many mob bosses did you know, though? Because that mob is involved with boxing.
I've been to
then.
The Ravenite Social Club.
Oh, okay.
No kidding.
All right.
Yeah, my wife and I were at Umberto's the night.
Kennedy was killed?
Gallo. Oh. No, Joey.
Oh.
Pop, pop. The guys leave. The cops give them a 10-minute head start and walk in. Oh.
Really?
Well, every place, every good restaurant up there has a back room that you don't go in.
Yeah. Okay.
When Vito Intofuermo won the middleweight champion, what a great Italian name.
Where were you the night that Paul Castellano got killed at Sparks?
I was at Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
Out on the sidewalk. That was a sloppy hit, you know, if you're going to do it.
You know, shit. I was in New York at that time playing with Alex Chilton. We were just across town. We drove by the next
night.
Man,
have I got some Alex Chilton stories. Are you kidding?
So do I.
You know, Dan Penn's one of my heroes.
Dan Penn's still around, man.
He and Spooner. I've got a live Spooner.
Spooner's
Dan,
still around, too.
The two of them.
Spooner came up on the podcast last week.
Man. We're talking, and I saw today somebody wrote an article at the anniversary of Doc Pomus's passing. I got to meet him, and then I got a copy of that Dr. John Does His Songbook.
Yeah.
Were we blessed to grow up in the greatest time in the history of music?
Well, so far.
Until the next Iguana album comes out, and then it'll up the standard, I guarantee you.
The Olympics is coming up now. It's so you have any thoughts? Were you ever at any of the Olympics?
Sure, plenty of them, and I'll tell you. Go look at the documentary.
You weren't
on
in Munich, were you?
No. I wasn't in Munich, and I wouldn't go to Russia because Carter backed out, if you'll remember
Yeah, we didn't go.
I was there when the Olympic hockey team went upstate when they beat the Russians, and seven Russians committed suicide that lost that game to the Americans. George brought the team.
Did they commit suicide or were they suicidal?
Well, they got, you know, but they were all military. You know,
they were at the Holiday Inn.
It's
kind of
Renee,
nobody can
like,
stand that.
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal on the Olympics. It's not amateur. We send the greatest pro basketball players in the world, and they're playing amateurs. That's horseshit.
That's bullshit. Now that was maybe, you know, back in the 90s when we sent the dream team. They were sending their pros in the 70s and 80s to
play
against
our amateurs.
They
don't even have good tennis shoes over there. Well,
nah, that's bullshit.
Okay,
man.
Well, I beg to differ.
But all the steroids.
Okay, how about this? I was there the night Willis Reed with a broken knee and a busted leg.
Yeah, came against the Lakers.
I was there.
Yeah, okay.
And I saw the greatest basketball? The Rucker League. I went to two games.
Oh, yeah, the Rucker Park is a great place.
Let me tell you something. There was a 45-year-old guy named Helicopter that was doing what Julius got named Dr. J at that park.
Yeah.
Send in the doctor. Helicopter's here. This guy was an alcoholic, more than likely an addict, had a pair of duct tape old sneakers, and they would come out there and do stuff that LeBron wouldn't get out of his own piss to try to do. Okay? They're babies
today's
now.
Today's NBA's pussy.
Oh,
man.
No, man. The last one, anyway, I loved it. I loved to draw it. Used to sit right near the bench. I loved the motion and the color.
When, back
it's a
in
beautiful
the 80s
sport for an artist.
When?
Well, my career with the Tom started in 71.
No, but I just said that today's NBA is pussy.
I don't watch any sports these days. It's all about money.
Really? You don't watch any sports?
Very rarely. I watch the WNBA. I think Caitlin Clark is a breath of fresh air.
I love Caitlin Clark.
What I hate is the media selling the racism, and that's bullshit.
No,
she doesn't seem to want to.
She's smart. They're keeping her away from
it. Why would she want to, you know, but...
Well, tell me this, Renee. Music and art have no color. I don't buy that. You can either bring it or you can't.
Well, yeah.
You know, when I was 14, I got to see Cannonball Adderley.
God doesn't care.
There you go. I mean, if you don't think God's got a sense of humor, fucking look around.
Hey, when I was 14, I was raped by a black woman, so I have no color.
Okay.
Thanks for sharing that, Manny.
All right, well, that's finally come out on the podcast.
Yeah.
Really, really.
He'll edit it out.
Pictures at 11.
No, why would I edit it out?
Pictures at 11.
I don't care.
Give me a bottle of bing over there. Anyway, Manny, I love you. You are precious, man.
I know.
But the state of sports today,
well,
it's not sports anymore. Most of the time, it's business. College football is a joke.
Yeah,
you know,
is.
I work
right.
with Bear Bryant.
Do you like that now NCAA players can get paid? At least it's a
well, I do because they should have been paid for years.
I agree.
I think what'll happen.
But it's a horrible business.
To be
now.
As diplomatic as I can, I think the college football will be the farm system for the NFL soon.
Yeah.
It'll
well,
have to be.
It has been
but
already.
But here's the
right?
deal. You cannot have team loyalty when you, the superstar quarterback's getting $1 million before you play a down, and me, the hefty lineman protecting your ass, gets a free T-shirt, because not every player's getting that big money.
Sure, right. sure.
There
sure.
is no parity.
Okay.
And I
right.
love it as a sport, but again, my son, who was an incredible, my son was a home run champ. He hit 180-foot home run off a tee when he was 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
But he was also 3 feet taller than everybody.
Yeah.
And I had to take his birth certificate to Little League games.
And he was
shaving in the second
right?
grade.
Was he on
huh?
acid? Was he on acid?
Was it?
No, he was on
no.
acid?
Oh, Doc Emlis played for the Yankees. Yeah. I had a run in with
well,
him.
Well, you know, they
afternoon.
Just had the...
Doc Emlis was a royal ass.
They just oh, yeah. had the 50th anniversary of Doc Emlis pitching a no-hitter when he was on LSD.
Well, he played for the Yankees, and he didn't like me because I was white. And I'm walking around. Okay, you're walking around the locker room with curlers in your hair, and you're calling me a whatever. He was a great athlete, but you got to separate the two because I know a lot of great athletes that if they were on fire, I wouldn't piss them out. They're just miserable
okay.
wife beaters. They're just human beings.
What great athletes did you really admire? Willie Mays? You ever meet
Never
Willie
met him.
Mays?
No, but I grew up in Birmingham. They
He's
just
passed
had,
away.
You remember the Honoring the Negro Leagues in mm-hmm. at Rickwood Field?
Yep.
Bob Kendrick that runs the Negro League Baseball Hall of Fame in Kansas City is a good friend of mine. And that is, by the way, one of the great museums in the entire world. He fought tirelessly for years. They finally got recognized. Their records are accepted, and the older players that are left with us get pensions.
I saw that.
Thanks to Bob Kendricks and all his hard work.
Good for him, man. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
my son was there at Rickwood. He's a cameraman with ESPN and Fox, and he's a brilliant, more talent than I'll ever had. But here's how racially polarized Birmingham is. He's up in the tower. He goes to work the second day, and there are bullet holes in the door where he was working.
Oh.
And I told him, I said, call him and tell him you're not working up there. It's sad. I grew up in the 60s. I had to stand in the kitchen of Pappy's Lounge to see Booker T and see, because I wanted to see him.
Right.
We couldn't come in their clubs and vice versa.
Right.
And it's a shame. Man, seeing Cannonball Adderley at 14 changed my molecules.
Yeah, sure.
Joe Zawinul, they were doing Country Preacher.
Right.
And Roy McCurdy. The first time I heard Zigaboo in this music, I heard Roy McCurdy doing that slow drag second line.
Uh-huh.
See the chill bumps?
Right.
The only real pain I have in my heart for anything, aside from this physical falling apart, every time I hear people like you, I want to play again. And that was very emotional seeing y'all in that. Where were we? Ohio or somewhere, and y'all were playing a club?
Yeah.
I walked in, and I took some pictures, and I made a sketch of just the accordion, everything on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I sit there, and y'all came out, and I couldn't draw the first two songs. I was just enraptured. And y'all really do touch me, and I'm not saying it because you're sitting there. I saw the band play The Weight at the Fillmore East for the very first time ever. Y'all are that level to me. Garth Hudson, Danko, Levon. That's
Richard.
That's our keyboard player took Richard Manuel's place. Richard Bell from Toronto, Canada.
Right.
He played on the Pearl album with Janis. He played on me and Bobby McGee.
Wow.
So I know my shit. I'm not a tourist.
That's a hell of a player, man.
Do you think we get Janis on the show?
She won't have much to say, and I never was a real fan.
Oh, you know, really? You didn't like Janis?
I was never a Dead fan.
I don't like the Dead either, but I'd like to get them on the show.
I know those guitars were in tune when they bought them.
I've always been a big Janis Joplin fan.
Well, I appreciate
her
gusto.
Yeah.
Well, Richard.
I stole so much off of those first records.
Well, go home tonight and play me and Bobby McGee, and at the very end of it, you hear Richard sniffling. I went to school on 57th Street, the Art Student Street. The building next door on 58th, on the back door, was the Dick Cavett show.
Oh, yeah.
And he was there. And I didn't even know it. He was there with her, and then Jimmy was there. But Dick Cavett, I went and drew him once, and I liked him a lot. He was a good interviewer. He didn't talk through it. But I only went to one show, and it was the night Hendrix was on. And he was very... But,
that was with William F. Buckley was on that same show, I think.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
God, what a memory.
Right. Yeah.
Man,
I know.
Chevrolet's pulling it out.
Wow.
And they seem to get along, I guess. Yeah.
Funny story about the Dead. The last assignment I had, I did a lot of photography. I don't know jack about a camera, but I make good pictures. Right. I tell stories.
Right.
I was at Soldier Field, the Grateful Dead, taking pictures of Traffic, who was magnificent. Capaldi was still in the band.
Uh-huh.
They had that great Jamaican bass player, Walfredo Reyes.
Steve Winwood's Traffic?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I saw them in the 70s. It was one of the most boring shows
really?
I've ever seen. Monica Civic. It was like, it was one of those bands that just turned their back to the audience and just jammed. No
when was it? 73?
73, 74.
Well, they played the Fillmore.
Awful.
Well, listen, that was the Swampers. That was Barry. That was David Hood and Roger Hawkins.
Yeah.
They were studio guys. They played 3-minute songs. They don't know what the hell 30 minutes worth of two notes is.
Yeah, yeah.
And it got, you know, I saw them at the Fillmore. And for the first 10 minutes, the Swampers, I don't think, ever did anything. Rebop came out and sang My Way by Frank Sinatra. And I'm going, wait a minute. Anyway, here's my Dead story. Three nights. The second night, I go to the media tent and I pick up the wrong tea, hot tea.
Okay.
I'm standing there looking at the crowd while they're changing gear and they put on a record and I see words coming out of the speakers. And their media guy comes up, man, are you okay? And I said, I'm fucking beautiful. And he said, come with me. I mean, he said my eyes were pie plates. They take me in the MASH unit tent, which they had and they sat me down, and the guy comes over, and he's looking in my eyes, and I didn't do much that night.
Okay.
But I ended up walking around Shakedown Street, the parking lot.
Right.
That, to me, was better than anything. And a good friend of mine, Oteil Burbridge, plays with the Dead Incorporate or whatever they're called.
In Company, yeah.
Have you seen the documentary on the engineer? Larry knows the guy that engineered and built the Sphere. It's a fucking miracle.
I have not seen that.
It's
but
2 billion2 billion LED lights, and they've got people tied to ropes that swing around, and when one goes out, a number.
This is Cirque du Soleil.
No, this is. It's called the Sphere.
The new venue.
It's a big, it looks
Vegas.
Like a big enlarged
like
top
LED,
of a condom. Yeah.
It's
a gazillion dollars a ticket.
Oh, I'm sure.
For $15,000, you can stand and watch Bob Weir eat a sandwich from 100 yards away.
Yeah.
And John Mayer is no Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, no, nobody does.
But Oteil Burbridge, you know Oteil's work.
Sure, sure.
Great player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's happy and I'm happy. But would I go see him? No.
Yeah, no, it's not my cup of tea either.
Anyway, I wish him well, and I love Oteil.
Oteil,
Aquarium Rescue Unit ruined every jam band for me.
Well, you know, Steve, this has been a great free associative episode.
We're glad you're in town.
And, jazz odyssey of conversation.
It has been a jazz odyssey of conversation, and it hasn't lagged at any point. And
the beautiful Dana's
we
here.
We never ran out of
Dana DePiro.
Thank you, Dana.
Dana's here.
Frankie and Johnny's, Larry Seabirth.
We had Larry Seabirth.
And Johnny's.
And George Goebel. George Goebel, and the visions of my friend Lynn. I love you, man. You want to hear my McCartney joke?
Yeah, I want to hear real fast.
So we're in the dressing room, and he says, so Patty goes into the bar, and McGillicuddy's, and he's in tears. He says, my friend, what's wrong? He says, well, I pull a good punk, don't I? I says, yeah, I donate to the church, don't I? He says, but they find out I fucked one goat. Paul McCartney, ladies and gentlemen, the greatest genius in my life. Brian Wilson.
Man has a word way with words.
Anyway.
One
go. That production,
right.
That'll be our name.
I think
thank
we got
you,
a show.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
It's a podcast.
Yeah.
Support this wonderful
thank
podcast.
You, Steve,
great
the great
job.
Steve Lowry, Manny Chevrolet. Once again, as we always say in the Troubled Nation, trouble never ends.
But the struggle continues. Thank you, Steve.
Good night.
Debbie is a singer. Inside plays the bass. Javier on the piano and on the drums is what's his face. Baby, pick me up. I think I need a smoke. Cause now it's time to rock these folks. 1, 2, 3. Flame on, party boys and party girls. Down at the flaming old.
to pay for